You are listening to Embodied People, a podcast co-hosted by Sarah Donahue and myself, Colleen Wall. We are both somatic movement educators and dance professors. We are also faculty at Integrated Movement Studies. In this podcast, we explore all things embodied. We explore anatomy, we explore meaning, metaphor, and how we make sense of out of our lives through our bodies. We also talk about developmental motor patterning, how it affects our psychological and emotional and psychic states as adults. And we really love to offer you movement practices and meditations that deepen your experience of your body so that your body is a generative place for you in your life. That is, it helps guide you towards and supports you in living the life that is most fulfilling for you. This podcast is sponsored by Integrated Movement Studies, and that is a certification program in the Laban-Bartynieff Movement Studies system. And if you'd like more information on Integrated Movement Studies and what the Laban-Bartynieff system is, beyond what we offer in this podcast, you can check out our website, imsmovement.com. Hi, and welcome back to Embodied People. This is Colleen, and this week's episode, it focuses on focus. In other words, how to focus in an embodied way. And this episode builds on the one from last week, which is how to build a movement practice. There are so many reasons that we could have a movement practice. And there's the movement practice that initiates the day. There also could be the movement practice that helps you transition from the workday into being home. There's all these different ways that we can, when we think about it and want to, that we can use our moving body or go to our moving body as part of the way that we navigate the transitions in life or what we need to do. And sometimes what we need to do is focus. We need to channel our attention or organize our attention onto a specific task. And so this episode is going to be some movement-related and embodied-related both practices, some mantras, some things that you can play with to help you focus. And hopefully these templates or these ideas will become templates that you can use to create your own ways to help yourself focus. So in preparation for this podcast, I looked up the root, the etymology, like the first uses of the word focus. And it sounds like it's about 1600s, 1700s, and it means the domestic hearth. And I just thought that was really interesting. Domestic hearth, sort of like where our care is laid out. I thought of it as an altar of care. And when I think about what I want to focus on and how in my life, whether it's focusing on like getting a podcast created or writing, that there's a way that there is a altar of care or a practice of care that focus highlights. But then there's also like focus in my life. Like what is the bigger picture things in my life that I focus on? Or say I want to be focusing on writing this book, but then I have these other things that are pulling focus, so that are pulling my care and my attention somewhere else. So focus means both when we sit down to write an email, the need to focus. And that's more what this podcast is designed on. But I also think there's something about focus in the bigger picture of life. Where do I want my focus to go? Where do I want to channel my creative energy and my loving, caring attention to nurture those things in my life? And then maybe where are things that are pulling my focus, that are challenging or asking me to put attention on them that maybe I don't want to? Maybe that's not the life I want to be living and designing for myself. So there is also in this how we organize our bodies and our neuromuscular systems to be putting our loving, caring energy into what we want to be putting them into, and how we can find ways in our movement to say no or to stop the drip and the drain of our energy in places that where our focus is being pulled away from what we want it to and towards something else. So I think you can hear a lot of what I'm talking about today as those bigger themes in the background. So say you have a task, a mundane task, like you have to do dishes or write an email. And let me tell you, for me, email, when I have to respond to an email, there's actually so many decisions that often go into responding to an email that it takes a lot of focus for me to respond to an email. And focus, in that sense, it's something that comes and goes. It has a fluctuation because saying, say you're responding to an email, and there's a lot of different small decisions that go into crafting that email, that your attention will sometimes broaden out to take in the whole and sometimes narrow in. And actually, inside of all that fluctuating of your attention is decision making. And decision making takes energy also. And also, when we are being asked to focus, we are often being asked to reinvest our attention in something over and over and over again. So just like decision-making, there's this moment-to-moment continual investment and reinvestment in where the attention is being channeled. And we do have in our lives, I think most of us, have a stream of my mind is wandering, I'm thinking about other things, and I'm coming back to the attention or the task at hand. And there are practices like meditation, and I also think what happens to people when they start dancing, because dance is a practice of channeling your attention to different parts of your body with different specific deliberate conscious goals, that I have seen over and over and over again. Students come into my fundamentals introduction to dance classes, and by the end of the semester, they talk about how much they focus better or how they shift their attention from one task to another much more quickly, much more readily than they did before they came into class. And I think that in the dance classroom, this is my side soapbox, but in the dance classroom, that your attention is constantly shifting from one part of your body to another with a specific intention. And that is, I think, actually training your mind and your perceptive processes to be able to channel your attention to focus and then reinvest your focus in something else and reinvest your focus in something else. So I will say I've experienced that in my own life, and I've seen it echoed over and over in students. So what does it mean to focus? I got a little off track of focus as I talked about my soapbox. That's funny. So it means reinvesting your attention, whether it's channeled laser-like pinpointed attention or more global all-encompassing attention. It also means making lots of small decisions moment after moment to continue to organize your attention towards something. And it also means this fluctuating or modulating of your own continuity. So this is what I was starting to say before, this modulating of your own continuity that sometimes has a free-flowing, kind of easeful ongoingness. And then sometimes it's more contained, it's more controlled and precise. And this shifting of our attention from big picture to single focused or channeled, from making decisions to sometimes being more easeful, sometimes being more controlled. This is fluctuating, these very subtle fluctuations that we study on an energetic level in the Laban-Bartinyov system. It's called effort. And I think that I'm bringing this up in the beginning is that the way that we focus is this sort of ongoing subtly fluctuating energetic rhythm or current that we ride upon, whether we're writing emails or gardening or having a conversation with friends, is we are navigating in very subtle ways these parts of our energy. And the ability to modulate our energy in a way that serves our tasks, serves our goals, is a part of maturing. It's a part of becoming more modulated and more able, I think, to fulfill the lives that we want and fulfill who we want to be. And so that's the underlying energetic baseline of focus. And I think that focus also has, at the most obvious level, it's associated with the sensory organs of the head end, my eyes, especially the eyes, which, I mean, we focus our eyes. The word focus is also associated with vision. Can I focus my vision? How much light are the eyes letting in, given the room and the circumstances? And then there's also the sense of the ears, so hearing, the sense of hearing that the ears let in. But I also think there's something about the nose and what we smell and what we taste, that all of these senses of the head end have something to do with focus, as well as the brain, the actual body part, the brain, that is really, really important. Our bodies are not computers. They are not. They are living, breathing, functional, expressive, generative, decaying life processes. And yet they have some associations to being mechanized. There are some parts of our bodies that we can swap things in and out, but it is our bodily beings are much more robust, or much more integrated and invested in, much more integrated within and connected and invested both with our inner environment and with our outer environment. But the senses of the head end and the brain, which has a computer-like processing capacity. So our brains are organizing all sorts of sensory information from our interior senses, our interoception, to our exterior perceptions, and what's happening on a really basic sensory level that we're hardly even aware of, to make sense out of what's going on both within us and the world outside. So it's like a supercomputer in some ways, though it's not a computer, but we can think of it that way in cases like this, to help us know that the brain is really also really important in focus. So we have a concentration of body parts at the head end that are important for focus. Now, one of the things that comes up based on this for me, and I'm thinking about this in terms of the structure of the human body, is that when the head end, the brain, the senses of the head end, when there is a feeling of relaxation up there, access to focus, access to the thinking function is, I believe, in my experience, it's heightened. So we have easier access to our thinking and our focus. When the senses of the head end and the brain, when they don't feel like they have support from below, when maybe they feel like they're hovering or there's other things that are having to hold tension, that actually it feels harder to focus. And while we may not be connected to what's going on further down in our bodies, below the head, I really believe and have experienced over and over and over again in students and clients and in myself how much the focus is stunted. And on a really simple level, if you think about being in pain, like having discomfort, whether it's pain somewhere else in the body, like lower back pain or shoulder pain, that it's almost like because that pulls focus, the lower back pain pulls focus, or the shoulder pulls focus, that part of us can't be fully invested in our channeling our attention to what we want, because there's something else in the background that's taking our attention away, that's pulling our focus away from it. So one of the most I think baseline things we want to do is get the organism as much as possible out of pain, or teach the organism that pain is tolerable in a way that it becomes increasingly in the background, and we have then more resources to focus. So one way that you can do that to start to reduce some of the tension further down is to find the feet, even if it's temporary, right? Because we don't stay frozen. We have to shift all the time in our bodies to keep ourselves going. But finding the feet, softening, bonding, yielding into the floor, and then with a little bit of pressure, a small amount of activation, that then allows the legs to activate, the pelvis to roll slightly forward onto the sits bones, and then the spine from the grounded, stable sit bones to float upward. And then for the shoulders and the senses of the head end to soften down into that support. So just to recap what I just said, that the feet and the legs are grounding into the support of the floor below you. And then the pelvis is also grounding, if you're sitting, grounding into the support of the chair, which lets the spine, instead of having to sort of dump and slouch into gravity, the spine can overcome gravity and lengthen. And then the shoulders and the senses of the head end and even the top, the skin on the top of the skull can all slide down into the support. And that alone, I think, has tremendous impact on our ability to focus, is to just simply root into support so that our shoulders and head can soften. What happens for a lot of people is it's really our head, in the senses of our head end, including things like our writing reflex, which is how we know we're vertical. Including our eyes and our ears, all of those parts of our body want to feel supported. They want to feel like they can settle into support from below. But when our bodies are sort of passively giving into or dumping into gravity, our head and shoulders can't feel the support from below. And so we pull our shoulders up and we tighten our upper back and we get all those cluster of pain around the base of the skull, the back of the neck, that feels like tension. And part of that tension is our upper body trying to feel supported, and it doesn't have the support from below. So it has to find support somewhere. So it grabs in the musculature in the upper. So that's one way. And I said something really important that I want to, in passing, that I want to bring your attention to, which is to sit on the front rim of your sit bones. So your sit bones are the ischial tuberosities. They're the bottom of your pelvis. And they're those two bony protrusions that are at the, basically like your butt. And most people have a lot of flesh in their butts, so they're hard to find. But if you bend your legs and sort of dig into where you normally sit, you might feel that there's a bony area there. So it's very common to kind of tuck the pelvis and round the lower back backwards. And that can feel kind of good and relaxed, but it actually doesn't give you the grounded support that you need. So you want to roll the pelvis slightly forward so that you're sitting on the front rim of the sits bones, like kind of almost like you're tilting your belly forward and you're on the front of your hips. And that will help you increasingly feel more supported and present in your body. And I'm hoping that that brings some ease. It also brings some reinvestment. So when you're starting to like feel your attention wane or drop, one simple way to reinvest is to find the support downward that then lets the other parts float upward. Another thing that I think can be really useful and simple for focus is to think about where there's a feeling of hardness in the body. So have your attention shift around sort of scanning the body, feeling where there's some hardness. And if you can, imagine that as like ice. And ice melts to liquid. And liquid evaporates to gas. And wherever there's places of hardness, just letting your attention go there for a minute. And then inviting the shift of ice to water to gas till it disperses. Another thing that can be really useful for focus is to find ways to increase oxygen in the body. And our brain, so again, coming back to the upper, the head end, our brain uses, while it only takes up 2% of the body, it uses 20% of the oxygen that we take in. So again, we are not machines, but you can think of oxygen as fuel for the brain. And if your inhale, so you breathe in and you take in oxygen, and that goes from your lungs, processes through to the heart, and then the heart moves that oxygen all the way through the whole rest of your body. And I believe like if your veins were stretched out, it would go from basically New York to Florida. It goes a very long way. But 20% of the oxygen that you take in with every breath goes to your brain. And if your brain is not getting the oxygen it needs, then your brain is not getting, it's basically its fuel source. It's not getting the support it needs to function. And so again, that sort of slouching, dumping into, giving into gravity position that a lot of people do as their fatigue, that's not helping your lungs get the oxygen it needs. It's actually diminishing the oxygen uptake that your body has. So there's some ways that you can get more oxygen. Yawning is one way that the brain starts to signal, hey, I need some help. I need some more oxygen here in order to do the functioning tasks that you're asking of me. But some other things that you can do that are really simple. One of these I talked about in the last episode, which is to send the middle back about where your lungs are, between your shoulder blades, so far back in your chair, like you're stretching from the inside out, almost like there's a hand in your lungs and it's pushing you back. And hold that for about 40 seconds. And then reverse that, sending the sternum so far forward that you're like stretching from the inside out. And you can do that a few times. Literally stretching the interior of your body, the interiority of the lungs especially, to give more space available to take in more oxygen. And that alone may be like, oh, wow, I feel so much better. I can focus more. You may have to do that every once in a while. But it will keep oxygen coming in. And you may feel like you need to inhale big or yawn after doing that. And that's like your body saying, hey, that felt good. Let's keep it going. And we do know that there's a direct correlation between brain activity and blood flow. And one of the challenges with sitting for a long time is that our blood flow is diminished. And so, of course, our brain activity becomes challenged if our body is not able to get the oxygen it needs to the brain. And so moving around will increase our blood flow, and then it helps increase brain activity. It is very, very important that we continue to both reinvest in on a physical level and stability and focus, but also that we can get up and move. So this brings me to another idea, and this is an idea that also comes out of the Laban-Bartynyov system. So oftentimes when we work with movement in the Laban-Bartynyov system, we look at different overarching themes, which are often polarities. So overarching themes are like big picture umbrellas that help us look at movement from different lenses and help us maybe see what's being preferenced or focused in one system, and also what might we could bring to a system to shed new light on it or know it in a different way. So for example, one common theme is function and expression. And when I was a personal trainer, And I was working with people who wanted to lose weight or build more muscle, that there was often a very functional way I was thinking about the body. You do this many reps. This is the way you design a program for fitness that progresses a specific skill set. But then there's also often this really expressive nature that's happening in fitness of people feeling more confident. And maybe that has to do with the width across the chest and new sensations in their body or feeling like, wow, I've really inserted my mass and moved more weight than I knew I could. And that's helping me know I can do things in my life that I didn't know I could do. So also there's this really expressive part of what's happening in fitness. And so the one that I wanted to talk about here is not so much function expression, but exertion recuperation. And in the Laban system, we think of exertion recuperation as not like the exertion was I ran all day and now I need to recuperate by sitting on the couch. But exertion is whatever investment in energetic life of movement, in actions, in the way I'm using space, in the way I'm channeling my attention, whatever the investment is that goes on for a while is the exertion. And the recuperation would be the thing that brings an aliveness, a reinvigoration to the system. And oftentimes we can't go from one thing to its opposite. That's kind of shocking. But we want to gradually shift different elements in movement to help us reinvest or help us recuperate from an exertion. So if I'm thinking about being at my computer and writing emails, that becomes an exertion, sitting still, channeled focus attention, making decisions. And so the recuperation, it might not be standing up and pounding on my chest and playing football. That might be too much, but there may be some subtle shifts that I can make that help me feel a recuperation in what I'm doing that I can then go back to it or reinvest in it from a fresher place. And so some options might be some of the things I just talked about, which was feeling, stretching the lungs. Another one oftentimes for me is closing my eyes. And this is an image that I often use, and I use my hands sometimes as well in the process, which is closing my eyes so that my attention, my channeled attention, can drop away from the screen and more inward to what's happening inside of me. And then I can use my hands to trace from the side or from the back of my body around the sides to the front. And I'll do this all through my torso, along my neck and my head. And as I do this, I will imagine centropy. So I imagine my body as like a matrix of living energy that folds into the center. So the system becomes more coherent in the center, as opposed to entropy, right? A system that moves towards chaos. Entropy is a system that moves towards coherence. And one of the things that this helps me do is it doesn't have me up running. It has me still seated or standing, and I'm still feeling this sort of sense of my flow, my continuity, but it takes my space attention, my attention to space out, and drops my attention inward. So that's one of the recuperative shifts. And it also brings my hands onto my own body, sort of tracing lightly. So I feel the three-dimensionality of my body. I feel the shape of my body. I feel its skin. And that can help me go from the real sort of heady place that we started talking about to remembering that I have sensory support from other parts of my body, that I am, in fact, a whole body. And sometimes when I do this, I even imagine, and it is just an image, but I imagine the brain of my body and the guts of my body, so my brain and guts sort of talking to each other, coming into connection. Or my brain and my heart, if it's a place I need more feelingfulness, and making sure they're connected, they're coherent, they're telling each other's truths as much as possible. So that's another one that I often use, closing my eyes and tracing. Another one is standing up and shaking my hands out around my body or moving the space around my body with my hands and twisting and spiraling and moving the space in my torso. Sometimes I do that together, like my hands were in water, moving water around, and my torso and belly and legs and hips have to go with it. And that feels like I'm moving the energy both inside of me and outside of me. But it can help me just feel really much better, much more able to focus. So just a couple more things about focus is that we also know that focus often requires both hemispheres of the brain and a lot of the actual brain itself, depending on the kind of tasks we're working on and what we're focusing on. But it asks that we have a fair amount of brain activity. And so one of the ways developmentally that we get more brain activity is we have our body parts cross the midline, which the midline is the long central axis of the body, basically that follows the spine and separates the right half of the body, the right arm, the right leg, the right side of the waist, the right shoulder, the right side of the face from the left side of the body. And for the majority of our body, the right side of the body moves to the left side of the brain. The left side of the body moves to the right side of the brain neurologically. Now, certainly our big toes go to the same side. So the right toe goes to the right half of the brain, the left big toe. Sorry, only the big toe. I left that out. The right big toe goes to the right side of the brain. The left big toe goes to the left side of the brain, even though the other parts cross. And that our eyes also need to be able to cross the midline so that my left eye can shift across and focus on something on the right side and vice versa. And so some other things that we can do for focus, this actually comes from Brain Gym. It's very simple. It's called cross crawls, where you touch opposite hand to opposite knee in like a rhythmic marching manner. And you can do this maybe 20, 30 times, sort of continuously in the same rhythm, where you can add on the right hand goes to the back foot, and that can help at least the limbs cross the midline. Now, I really like to take the eyes to focus on the hand that's in the back. So say my right knee and my left hand touch around my belly button, my right hand then would reach up and back behind me. And it's even better, I think, to take the eyes to the hand back there, the right hand, and then switch and switch and switch. So you're balancing while taking your eyes up and back. And I also think it can be really helpful to start slow and take some big inhale and exhale and balance when you look at the hand and then switch to the other side. And there's a lot of reasons for this. So I'm starting to combine some different ideas that I've presented so far. Like an inhale, getting more oxygen, which helps the brain integrate and retain the eyes going somewhere else. Also crossing the midline. So this is a really, really great thing to do to help focus, is to get some rhythmic crossing of the midline. And another thing that can feel super good that's in this line is to take your hands at your forehead and just start to pull the skin apart at your forehead area. And that can help to relieve some of the tension, can help to remind the brain to function, and it can help to soften the shoulders and the neck. So these are a few different things you can do. Another thing you can do is then take the fingertips and push them together, which helps to feel like not just the crossing of the midline, but the integration of the two hemispheres of the body. So those are some other things that you can do on a movement level that I think can really, really help. And yeah, I think I've covered a lot of things at this point. Especially focusing on different ways you can work with your body to think about focus. And in all of this, I do think sometimes you have to get up and walk, which is still a rhythmic, in many cases, crossing of the midline. you're at least organizing your body through cross quadrants, so like the lower left quadrant with the upper right quadrant. So you're organizing your body that way when you walk, which is really, really good for the brain. So I think the last thing I want to say as I bring this to a close is that working with your body to support your as a your focus is not just about, or maybe it's not really about productivity and accomplishment at all. My hope is that it is about finding ways to support your attention so that you're organizing your body and your energy and the energies of your life so that you are designing your days, designing your spaces, designing your life in a way that is increasingly coherent with the life that you want to be living for yourself. Instead of getting your focus pulled away from what you want towards something that, whether it's a person or a relationship or an environment or an Instagram or a imagined fantasy of what life could be, but so that you're able to be attentive and present and focused in the cultivating of what it is that you do want, and better supported to not get pulled away from what you do want and it's getting invested in or distracted by or consumed and sucked into what you don't want. And I think I want to end it with this. Was a couple of years ago, I don't know, maybe a lot of years ago, there was a student who I was connected to through her professor who wanted to find ways to work with bosses and managers to bring essential oils into the employees to help make the employees more productive. And, you know, I have done a fair amount of corporate movement workshops and corporate coaching in my time as a movement therapist and educator. But I really struggled with the idea of a boss, like having somebody work with essential oils to make them more productive. And I think I'm pretty highly focused and productive as it is at my job. And the thought that the president of my university would implement a policy of essential oils to help me become more productive really got under my skin. It really felt like, no, that is not the point. That is not what this is for. And, you know, I've thought a lot about that, but I think what it is for, what some of these resources that hopefully you're developing as you listen to this podcast and pay attention to how some of the suggestions shift your understanding and the way that you live out your moving life, is that it helps us not just become more productive, but it helps us feel more human, more aware of the choices we're making and how we are occupying ourselves. It helps us feel more alive and more present as we do the tasks that we do. And maybe it makes us more productive. Maybe, hopefully, it makes the whatever productivity we pursue more creative, more whole, and more easeful so that we continue to have the energy and excitement about what is really important. So that is with that I want to say. It's not necessarily about getting things done, but it's about feeling ease and ease in your accomplishments. As one of my mentors, Peggy Hackney, would say, it's feeling ease of accomplishment as you move through that which you do. So thank you for listening, and more next week.